morning. If you're like me, it is easy to disregard certain traditions about some of the holidays that are at this time, Passover and Easter. Sometimes we seek to crawl out of their shell so as to inspire a more meaningful future, a way of looking at life of these events in ways that make more sense to us than some of the ways that they have been told to us in times past. Talk of sin, atonement, tribalistic views of God that would have God rain his wrath down on our enemies, maybe even ourselves if we don't get things in order, can make us a little uncomfortable, to say the least. We feel more comfortable with a theology or a worldview which emphasizes love, kindness, tolerance, open-mindedness, and truth-seeking, independent of archaic creeds or images or rituals that might tend to divide people rather than bring them together. And maybe, just maybe, it is possible in this church to look at some of these old stories in new ways, in ways in which we might be able to see them with new eyes, meanings that have been lost to us because we focus so much on those other meanings. This is what this morning is to be. I welcome your celebration of Passover and Easter with me this morning as we reconsider their meanings for our lives today.
I hope you're all enjoying this wonderful Wisconsin spring, which will begin in 6 weeks. My name is Blake McNulty. I'm the board rep this morning, and I have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Please read the announcements that are listed in the order of service, and you might want to take the order of service along home to read them. In addition, I've got a few other announcements to read. One from Tom Hubland in regard to Habitat for Humanity. Please remember that next Saturday is our next Habitat for Humanity workshop. Details will not be known until late in the week, so watch your email. If you're not on the member list but are interested, see Tom. Where's Tom located over here? Also, I think this is from Mary Pope in regard to the art auction. If you had the winning bid on an item in the art auction and you brought your check, if you can pick it up today, please see me. Mary Pope will be in the office after the service. And Diane has an announcement.
Everyone, this year's LCUUC 5th Annual Rummage and Plant Sale will be held on Friday, May 13th and Saturday, May 14th. For our congregation only, we are continuing the sale on Sunday, May 15th, before and after the service until about 2 p.m. There will be sign-up sheets next Sunday for much-needed help for sorting, organizing, the sale days, and cleanup. You can start bringing your rummage next Sunday, May 1st. Check your newsletter for more details. Please see Esther Flakes or me, Diane McBain, if you have any questions. Let's make this a super fundraiser, and remember, many helping hands make work fun. Thank you.
I invite you to greet those seated around you. If you're visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger, which is on the visitor's table in the foyer. There's also a variety of information available on that table about our church and about Unitarian Universalism. Please help yourself to any of that that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about the church, or if you have been visiting us for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk with you about that as well. If you're visiting with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to religious ed classes. Your child is welcome to join them or to remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just outside the door to my right and across the hall, across the entranceway, if there's a need for childcare during the service. Classes will end at 11:15, at which time you can pick up your children from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If you have any members that you have brought with you today, or if any members have brought guests today, we would be pleased if you would introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a good time to do so. We would really enjoy meeting you. Any guests?
Good morning. Happy Easter. Jeff Llewellyn and my wife, Mary Jo Llewellyn. Been residents of Heartland for 10, 15 years, and we're out exploring this morning.
Welcome.
I'd like to welcome our daughter Melissa and our grandson Devin.
Hi, I'm Sarah Ketter. I'm pleased to be with you in this beautiful room today. I am now sort of seeking a community and hopefully going back to my husband and pulling him out. My daughter Jessica Fullerton came to this church when she was in college at Carroll University, I believe. And she said to say hello to everybody that she loves and hasn't seen. And she just had a baby 3 weeks premature, so okay, I'm loving
it. I'm Lorraine Hendricks, and this is my husband Lance. And we've been Unitarians for about 25 years, but we moved to Wisconsin and now we're looking for a new church home.
Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion of the service. Please be sure to put your cell phones on silent mode during the service, gum wrapper, that. I hope you find, I know you'll find this morning's service interesting, because we enjoyed having Brett Meyer as a speaker before. Brett?
Sing our chalice lighting song, and the words are in your order of service.
Story for all ages, so children especially, but if you would like to come up and you're not quite a child, yeah, please come up now. Good morning. How are you all today? I have a picture of something here, and can anybody read what that says? Yes? The Seder. The Seder meal, that's right. Now, a Seder meal happens during Passover time, and this is a Passover time right now. In fact, matter, we're in the midst of Passover right now. It started some days ago, and it continues, it goes for a total of 8 days. And the first meal on that first evening is called the Seder meal. And so it's very special. Have you ever eaten a meal that represented your life? That's what this is about. The Seder meal represents the life of the Hebrew people. Now, when they were in Egypt, they were slaves. They were made to do, make buildings and things and real hard tasks. And they were basically the servants of the Egyptian people at that time. And so they finally got liberated from that. And they remember that liberation event by this plate of food. Now, on this plate of food, we have some different symbols here. Now, this over here on this side represents bitter herbs, like horseradish. Have you ever had horseradish before? Horseradish really makes you tear up, doesn't it? Well, it reminds us of the bitterness of slavery that they went through. And so that's why that is on there. Now, in Christian terms, Jesus also ate the Passover meal, the Seder meal, just before his crucifixion. In fact, Mary, they call it his Last Supper. And so we also, if we're on the Christian side of things, we may think of the bitter herbs represent the bitterness of his suffering. Now, the next thing we have is this. Now, this is dates and apples and walnuts and other kinds of nuts and fruits and such. And it's called Haraset. And what this represents is the mortar. Anybody know what mortar is? Mortar is the stuff that, have you ever seen like a building with bricks, made of bricks? And the stuff in between the bricks, you know, it's a different color, right? That's the mortar. Okay, that's the stuff that holds all the bricks together. So that's one of the things that the Hebrew people had to make is this mortar. And so this food represents that mortar, and it reminds them of the hard labor that they had while they were still slaves in Egypt. Now, on again, you can look at it from those who would be on the Christian side of things, and they may say that, well, that might represent the sense in which the virtues of Jesus, that they all apply to us, and that they're the things that hold us together in community, things like love and peace and justice, all those things that would hold us together as one community, just like they would hold a building together, being the mortar. So we go on to the next thing, and this is parsley. And parsley in a Seder meal is dipped in salt water. And it represents a couple things. Now, parsley represents new life. Now, what happens in the springtime to plants? Do you see a lot of plants that are blooming right now? Yeah, they sprout up and they get green. And like the trees, they all sprout and sometimes they have flowers and stuff like that. So this reminds us of the hope of new life and of spring. But the salt water that we dip the parsley in, if we're partaking of a Seder meal, is the remembrance of the bitter tears that we shed while we were still as slaves. So that's the second thing. Now, in the Christian tradition, it's pretty much the same way as well. But it may put a little bit more emphasis on the new life that we have in Jesus and following his way of love and peace. But still, the bitter tears that can be had for doing so. Now, the next thing we see is, what's that look like? An egg. Yeah, it's an egg. So what do you think an egg represents? It also kind of represents new life, but it also is a symbol for the desire for freedom, because if you're not free, you want to be free, right? Yeah, of course. And so that's a symbol of freedom. So when a chicken breaks out of its shell, it's free then, right? So sometimes we feel like we're in a shell, and we need to break out of that, and that's that sense of freedom that we get. And that's true for both traditions. In fact, where in Easter, we have, what do we call, what kind of eggs?
Easter eggs.
Easter eggs, that's right. And they're often many colors. And so they're also a symbol of the beauty and joy of life as well. Okay, then we have this. Now, that's a piece of bread, but it's not the kind of bread that we usually eat. Most of the bread that we eat is has yeast in it, or what the Hebrews would call leaven. But when they had to escape Egypt, they had to do it so quickly and with such haste that they didn't have time to put the yeast in it. So they just mixed flour and water together, and it made this kind of real flat bread, and they call it matzah. And this represents their haste that they had to have in order to escape Egypt and get into freedom. And it reminds us, too, that sometimes that we need to, as people, whenever we see somebody who's oppressed or who is suffering, that we shouldn't delay, that we should try to act as soon as possible on their behalf so that they don't have to suffer anymore. So the haste that we need to make justice in our world is one of the things that we remember, whether we are Jew or Christian or you or whatever our tradition may be. And then the last thing over here is wine, or it could be grape juice. And that represents the goodness and the joy of living, of life. And on Seder meals, oftentimes there's a lot of joy and happiness that goes on in those. And it reminds us that now that we are liberated from our oppression, from our past slavery, that we can enjoy life. Now, on the Christian side, the bread represents the body of Jesus, which becomes then the whole community of people, and the wine can represent the blood or the spirit. The blood was considered to have the spirit in it. And so if it's the spirit of Jesus, then it would be the spirit of love, of peace, of justice, of kindness, of compassion, all those things. So these are ways in which we can still today kind of remember this tradition and the two traditions that celebrate it. And I hope that you both will remember these things as well when you eat some of these food. When you go home and you eat some food today, think about, how does this represent my life? How does it say anything about what my life is? Okay? Thank you very much for coming up. Have a good day. And now we will sing from our hymnals, number 104, When Israel Was in Egypt Land.
Thank you.
time. This is the time in our service when we collect the offertory to support our spiritual community. If you're visiting us today, know that you're our guests and a contribution is not expected. Thank you. Responsive reading is in your order of service. I will read the regular lines, and if the congregation will read the lines that are bolded. In the stories of Passover and Easter, a people of faith reclaimed the story of their liberation from bondage and servitude to a life of freedom, virtue, and peace.
Wherever there is oppression, their stories resonate with us, who become our stories. Their courage becomes our courage.
Because of their example, we are encouraged to walk away from our own enslavements, through our own waters of turbulence and fear, through the wilderness of disillusionment and discontent, and on to a promised land.
Our liberation is not only that which oppresses us, but that which makes our spirits soar.
We hold to a resurrection spirit that affirms that we are not so much to be identified with the circumstances in which we face as we are by the hope in our quest for a life filled with joy, love, dignity, and grace.
We too can pass on the story of liberation and transformation, a faith that justice need not be delayed or denied, a hope that peace will fill every heart and every land, and a love that will help us help each other as we would want to be helped ourselves.
This is the sacred time in our service where we share our deepest concerns and great joys with our spiritual community. If you have a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand and the microphone will be brought to you by an usher. Let us know your first name and then briefly tell us your joy or concern. I will light a candle as a symbol for your joy or concern so that we as a congregation can hold that in our hearts and hopefully lighten your sorrow and increase your joy. I'll light our first memorial candle to acknowledge the conflicts that are going on in our world right now, and that we may find a better way.
Good morning, my name is Jesse Knox, and if you could please light a candle of concern. A teenager, a 14-year-old named Rachel Salmon, took her life last Wednesday, April 20th. And I guess I just need to say something in holding her family in my thoughts and just in hopes for reaching out to teens who feel desperate and disconnected. Thanks.
Hi there, I'm Tom, and this is a joy concerning our son, Michael, that some of you may remember from RE here a few years ago, but he bought a ring and asked Becky, and she said yes, so we're announcing the engagement of Michael Levin and Becky Familiaro.
And I'm Lori Lovin, and we have another joy. I have accepted the position of assistant minister at Unitarian Universalist Church West, and I'll be beginning in the first week of May.
Barb, please light a candle of joy that we are creeping into spring and will spring very soon.
I'm following up with Barb. I'm Al. I put the snowblower away last Sunday, so this is a light a candle of concern for all of you that want to blame the snow that came on me.
My name is Kaz. I've talked to my sister in Japan, and life is going back to normal, she says. And seems like they will have that nuclear plant under control, and they are working, some of the people, to try to get them back to their houses. So that sounds good.
I'll light a final candle for the joys and concerns that we keep close to our hearts.
I'd like to invite you into just some silent meditation at this time for all those concerns that have been raised, as well as some that you may have kept to your own hearts. Let us be in silent meditation at this time. Prayer resonates in our hearts because whether we are filled with joy or whether we are filled with sorrow, it speaks to our whole being. Prayer is the opportunity for us to listen to learn and also to speak. Prayer is the opportunity for us to share of our deepest, innermost feelings. In this time of Passover, of Easter, we give thanks for those stories that have touched lives so meaningfully in the past and continue to do so in the present. We give thanks for the blessings of life, the symbolism of new life by both of these traditions. Passover reminds us that whether we are free or not, or maybe only partially free, that liberation is what we all seek for. And by the grace that is made possible, we can one day be free. And Easter also is a symbol of that liberation and freedom. The freedom to live lives abundant. Not just the same lives that we have lived before, but better ones. Transformed lives that allow us to go into this world more loving, more peaceful, more inspired by grace. Let this be our lesson today as we go forth into a new day with new eyes. Join with me in singing number 269, Lo, the Day of Days is Here.
Passover Seder that Jesus shared as his Last Supper with the 12 disciples, and that Christians have ever since celebrated as a primary sacrament of the Church, Holy Communion. In the sacrament of Holy Communion, the emphasis is on remembering Jesus and his redemptive acts through the sharing of the bread and the cup. However, a fuller understanding of this sacrament, and particularly of Jesus' understanding of what he was doing in having the disciples remember him whenever they would once a year partake of the Passover Seder, is recalled as we participate in the ancient Jewish ritual that long antedates the Last Supper. The gospel writers were tying Jesus' life to that of the holy history of Israel, seeing his own life within the context of the bitter suffering of his ancestors, but also as one in which there would be liberation and redemption, not just for himself, but for all who would follow his teachings and example how to live in right relationship with God and with all humanity and God's creation. Seder means order, and so it is a very ordered meal with common steps and traditional symbolism. However, there is a wide variety in which seders may be performed, even though the symbolism is very much the same. Seders are partaken during the high holiday of Passover, a 7 to 8 day celebration of the liberation of the Jewish people. The Seder is an account of God's liberating and redemptive acts that set the Hebrews free from their bondage, leading them from labored imprisonment in Egypt into the wilderness of the Sinai Peninsula, and finally on to the promised land of Israel. As told in the book of Exodus, the Israelites had grown numerically in Egypt such that the Pharaoh feared they may turn and fight against the Egyptians. To stifle this possibility, he ordered that they were to serve grueling, hard labor under taskmasters so as to take away their spirit to rebel. Even the male children of the Israelites were ordered to be killed in order to quell their numbers, though the order, as is in the case of Moses, was not always followed. The story is told that God, seeing the slavery of the people and hearing their prayers, took decisive action to bring about their freedom. A series of 10 plagues that beset the Egyptians are proclaimed as having been sent by God for the purpose of Jewish deliverance, redemption, and liberation. The culminating 10th plague was the one that finally convinced the Pharaoh to let the Israelites go. It was the plague of death on firstborn children in Egypt. By marking their doorposts and lintels of their house with the blood of a lamb, the Israelites were able to petition God to pass over their home, thus sparing their firstborn children from death. This was an ironic twist of fate, since the Pharaoh had declared that all the sons born to the Hebrews were to be destroyed. The Israelites were released from their captivity, only to later be chased by the Egyptian army after Pharaoh reconsidered, thus setting up the climax of the Israelites passing through the waters of the Red Sea and the waters rejoining to trap the Egyptians who were trying to stop them. The retelling of God's action in Exodus via the Seder meal is to pass on to the faith that God is there with us in all things and will lead us into freedom, no matter how hopeless we may feel at the time. It is a story not only of past deliverance, but future deliverance. It is a story of our continued hope that all people will be liberated and that all creation will be redeemed together in a messianic age in which peace and love will prevail in every heart and between all peoples. Because this is a story of liberation and redemption, it is a story of celebration and fun. It is a story that we are to pass on from generation to generation, nurturing both our sense of history and our sense of hope.
I had her read the reading you just heard to kind of remind us of what the story is of Passover, of things that are positive, of some things that may make us a little uncomfortable. I must admit that I have quite a few concerns with regards to both Passover and Easter in some of the storylines that have been interpreted from these events in the past. Some of those things that for me are bothersome are the sense of which there's a tribalistic view of God, that God is our God and God's going to fight for us against everybody else, and is even going to bring death upon firstborn children of all things. That sounds pretty ungodlike to me. Another thing is that the sense of in both stories, of sin and the need for atonement, that humanity is so bad that we need some sacrifice to kind of expiate our sins and take them away. Granted, there's a lot of bad things that happen in the world. But on the other hand, doesn't it not take away some of our responsibility to make those things happen in ourselves by saying that it's all done through someone else? Another thing that kind of bothers me is the sense in which we have these plagues that are a curse upon people, in this case mainly the Egyptians. Is that a godly thing to do? But beyond all of these things that may disturb me, maybe you as well, are some wonderful truths, I believe, in this story. There are things that I think, even for our day and age, we can garner from them. Now, as you use, we believe in being pluralistic. And one of the things that we try to emphasize is the commonality between all traditions and faiths. But sometimes, and a UU pastor by the name of Kathleen McTeague said these words as kind of a precedent for what I'm going to be talking about this morning. She says that one of the great gifts of universalist part of our faith is that it teaches us to look for the spiritual truth not in one particular religious tradition alone, but in many of them. It teaches us to look for lessons in Scripture, but it doesn't let us think of those lessons as exclusive. It lets us move away from orthodoxies that don't work for us anymore, but pushes us to look beneath them to find the kernel of gold, the core truth, still there underneath the layers of dogma. But, she warns, there are perils in universalism too. One of them is that if we're not careful, we can sometimes dilute the particularity of each religious tradition. We can look so hard for a common denominator that we end up reducing down to almost nothing the specific beauty of a story, a tradition, a spiritual practice. Do we do that as you use? I think sometimes we have that tendency to do so. So one of the things I'm going to point out, both in its positive as well as negative, is some of the particularities of these two events that for both Jews and Christians are huge events, life-changing, faith-changing events in their lives. Starting out with the Passover. The Passover is more than just how it's been described so far. It really is a story about liberation. Liberation not only from bondage, from slavery, but also a liberation of a human spirit. Many of the commentators point out that even though the Israelites were liberated from Egypt, and the way that they were because of this series of 10 plagues that was cast upon the Egyptian people, that there is a lot of sympathy by Jewish people for the Egyptians, for why all of this death. They didn't want it any more than anyone else. So it is a sense of which it's a softening of the story today that Seder meals are often presented. Still, as we talked about with the children, the Seder meal and each of the aspects, another theme of Passover is the bitterness of slavery and suffering that they went through. It is a reminder that while our lives may not be enslaved or in bondage at this time, that is always possible. And we still know in this world today, there are people who are slaves. And it reminds us of the possibility that we need to try to overcome that slavery, to try to create justice where there is no justice. There is a sense in which in the message that there is a tribalism, an us versus them. But modern Jews today, at least of the Reform Judaism, emphasize that
the whole tribe is humanity, or even Earth itself, the world itself. And so that it is one big body, not just us versus them. There is a emphasis on the escape from tyranny, and military power. And this is kind of something that we can use for today, because are there not many tyrannies and tyrants in our world today? It is an escape not only from tyranny, but also from military use of power in any case. In the Passover story and the Exodus story, there was not violence used to help them to escape. If we don't count the place after the escape had actually taken place, when the Egyptians followed them into the desert and got them up against the what is called the Red Sea, actually it was more the Sea of Reeds, which was a very low-lying bottom of water. What that story represents is that there didn't need to be violence in order to escape. That somehow serendipity, God, whatever you would call that, enabled them to be free without the use of any force or violence. That is maybe a telling reminder of our own day. Can we find ways to resolve conflicts in non-military ways? It is a reminder that empire is no match for the desire for freedom and for justice. There is a sense, too, in which there's a faith in justice itself, that in the Jewish tradition it would be the faith that God is going to be just and is going to make everything right. For those who have a less theistic view of life, it might be that the moral arc of the universe is going to hold sway. As Martin Luther King Jr. Once said, the long arm of the universe is long. And so when we think about that, we look at the things that happen in our lives, the tragedies, someone committing suicide, the devastation upon Japan. We see the wars and conflicts going around. We see the violence in our world and we wonder, is it ever going to be where justice truly reigns? These stories are reminders to have faith in the midst of hopelessness and despair. It's interesting that in this story, Hebrew people did not see things coming as they came. They couldn't imagine themselves, while they were still in Egypt and slaves, that they would ever be released by Pharaoh. They couldn't imagine it, and yet it happened. They couldn't imagine that once they were caught at the Sea of Reeds or the Red Sea, that they would be able to withstand a military force that was put up against them. And yet, they found a way. These are reminders, sacred reminders, whether they were factually true or not, of the desire for us to have a faith in faith itself. On the Christian side of things, Easter is a reminder of Passover as well. Jesus' Last Supper was a Seder meal. And much of the symbolism that we've already talked about with the children as well as in the message so far is that these are the things that Jesus would have been reminding him of disciples of. And yet, it was transformed for Christians that the bread became the body of Christ, not simply of Jesus, but of Christ, the body of all people who might believe in the same virtues of love, of peace, of justice that he himself did. And so, these are some of the things that we recall. Liberation. Liberation of body and of soul. This is a truth that still remains for our time. How do we remember these stories of Passover, of Easter, in such a way that it reminds us to keep on striving for justice, for freedom, not only for ourselves, but for all people? That's one of the things that Easter and Passover remind us to do. It helps us in the midst of despair and hopelessness to look back on these events in which we can't imagine things happening as they did, and yet believing that somehow life will have a way. The sense of providence, of serendipity, of grace, whatever you want to call it, of something bigger than ourselves, is one of the things that I have a little bit of trouble with. I would like to think in my life that whatever my destiny may be, it was my choice. We like to think that we have a lot of influence on how we end up being. Now, most of us recognize that the circumstances of life, tragedies can happen to us, like natural disasters, as in Japan, that are beyond our control. But that we can still respond to those things in certain ways that help us to kind of rise above those things. These stories of Passover and Easter are reminders that life can be transformative even in the midst of pain and suffering. Miracles. We don't like to think so much of miracles, and I don't think of them so much myself. But can we open ourselves up to the possibility that things may happen in ways that we can't imagine and that we can't explain? I don't know for you in your life, but I've had certain things that in a previous time I might have said these were miracles that happened in my life. I might not describe them as much because I'm a little bit more scientific in my understanding of things, but I would still say I can't explain these things. And whether we call them miracles or whether we call them something else, there's something sometimes that happens, and it's often rare, that transforms the way that we look at life. It is something so powerful that happens to us or to somebody else that affects our lives that we cannot help but be thankful because we had no part in it. I don't know exactly whether to attribute that to a deity or whether to say that it's cosmic serendipity or whatever you would want to call it. I don't know what to call it, except for I would call it a word that both the Jewish and the Christian tradition calls grace. Something that is unearned, that is unmerited, that is not a result of our actions whatsoever, but that just happens for good. Do you see those things happen? That's really, I think, what these two stories for us can tell us, is that liberation, grace, wonder, awe are still present in this world. Science can't explain still all the things that are good. I happen to think that, especially with regards to, as we refer to the Easter story and the resurrection of Jesus, I'm not so sure that I would lay any claim to any of the facts that are claimed about Easter. But the thing that is more important to me is a fact. And that is something, whatever it was, happened during that time that transformed the lives of those disciples in such a way that they decided to take on the character traits of the one they called Jesus. And they themselves decided that they would be forgiving, that they would be more loving, that they would try to create a kingdom of God that would be a kingdom of peace. And that they would do this not only for them and their families and those who are like them, but for all humanity. And not only for all humanity, but for all the world. As the prophets of ancient Israel also said. If we look back to the words of Isaiah, the lion shall lie down with the lamb. The bear and the cow shall graze together in peace, that all living things shall be in a harmonious relationship. From our scientific worldview and understanding of the social realities of the world, how many would say the lion is going to lie down with the lamb and all peace is going to reign throughout all the earth? How many would raise their hands with that? I will be the first to put my hand down. because my intellect tells me, no way. It's not going to happen. Just look at life. Look at reality. Look at the way it's been for thousands of years in the past and the way it is still today, right now. Sorry, it just doesn't make sense. Passover and Easter are kind of ways to say, despite that, have faith that someday it will occur. Not because we necessarily believe it really will occur, but because that is what life is about. Because if we don't have that, we don't have much at all. I can say in my life that in the hardest times that I've ever had, I've lost hope that things would be better. I admit that about myself. I admit that I could not see any light at the end of the tunnel, that things just weren't going to get any better. Somehow they did. It wasn't my doing. I can't say that it was God's providence that made it happen, but somehow things worked out. Even in the things that never worked out, of family members that have died, of people that I love that have died, something I could take from those events and their lives reminded me that what was good in them can remain in me, and that I can pass that on to someone else. If that's not what the story of liberation of Passover is about, I'm not exactly sure what it is. If it's not what Easter is at the core of Easter tradition, that our lives, our spirits can be transformed to live life more abundantly, I'm not exactly sure what it is. Many Christians today are going to say that Jesus is the way and atoned for us. Today I would offer a different interpretation. That it was not Jesus, the person himself, but rather his way of life. His love, his forgiveness, his peace, his desire for justice for all people that can become our spirit too. Whether we be Jews, as he was, whether we be Christians that came after him, whether we be Buddhists, Hindu, Muslim, Sikh, Jain, Yu, whether we be atheists, agnostic, whether we have no faith in anything whatsoever, except for maybe that love really is the greatest reality there is, and that peace is what we all want to strive for. Passover and Easter, I would say to you today, are about love. They're about peace. They're about liberation. And if we can have faith in these things in the midst of all the things that might keep us from having faith in them, somehow there has been a victory won. Blessings be. Amen. If you will all join with me in singing Now the Green Blade Rises, it's number 266 in the hymnals. seated. This is the fun part of being able to respond to what you've heard and maybe offer your own comments or questions. So, the problem with speaking on this particular topic is there is about 10,000 more things I would rather have said, or not rather have said, but at least said that didn't get said. So this is that opportunity.
Hi, I'm Judy. I've totally been absent. Decided to show up today, and I just really want to share a couple things because, and there's no way I can. Just a few highlights. Because I grew up, well, I am Jewish, and our biggest family gathering was Passover. And I haven't been to a Seder in many, many years, and my family's scattered all over the country, but and the world, actually, and some are long gone. And the things that I remember so much, I mean, I'm hearing all this stuff about the meaning of Passover, and I'm just trying not to laugh the whole time because it was the most irreverent time that our family was together, and everybody was a comedian. And we used to call my father the Seder Nazi. And my parents were both Holocaust survivors, so that was really, really bad. But the things that I just remember, that I keep thinking about now, just how the Seder evolved so much in our family based on how old everybody got and how the kids, you know, everything changed as the kids got older, but also what text you chose, because my father always chose a very contemporary Haggadah, which is the story of Passover, and it was pretty skinny. And what I remember the most about the books, though now I have the collection of all our Haggadahs, as I go through them and I can see where he scratched out stuff, where he didn't want to read that, it was going to be too long and he'd lose our attention. And I'd see all his thumbprints of, because his hand was in the haroset, and the wine stains all over everything. And then, like, I always remember there was a seat left for Elijah. I was supposed to come in, and you were supposed to run and open the door. But my father would always say, oh, Harvey's going to show up. And later I learned that was Jimmy Stewart was supposed to show up, the rabbit. So, like, he mixed Easter and Passover. And I just, the things I remember so much, though, are my nephews and nieces who are now in their 30s and even 40s, just how we just knew everybody was going to get really drunk and joke around. And my father would just give up. You know, he just would lose us. But it was just so much fun. And then when I met my husband, too, I just wanted to say I went to Sayers at his place. And their book was really, really skinny, and it was the secular humanist Haggadah. And, you know, all my friends who still have Sayers now, it's just like a marathon to try to get through them. But, you know, because some of them are so long and lengthy, but we always cut to the chase and had a lot of fun. And that's just what I remember so much. And just being really lively and crazy, just so much fun.
I thank you for saying that, because that's one of the things I didn't add in here, but the Seders are fun. And actually, I had selected a few songs that we might sing that would be much more irreverent. but it was just hard to put those in and get the music down for those today. But the sense of the irreverence and joy and people getting loose, because there's you have to, you know, drink the wine after everything that you eat and fill up that glass again. So it really is a time of celebration. And the other thing that you mentioned is that everyone is different. So there are, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of different ways that you can do the Seder meal and the emphasis that you can have on it. So that thank you for bringing that up.
I'm Jerry. Brett, I'd like to thank you for presenting today's service. And I'd like to personally extend you a welcome home. As far as the events of the Exodus and of the crucifixion, I know that from what I've read, there's really no historic corroboration on the part of the Egyptians that the Israelites were ever held there as slaves and there ever was an Exodus, in spite of the fact that the Egyptians were very good record keepers, including keeping records even of the details of how much wages the builders of the pyramids were paid. And then the idea of the Christian story that a loving God would somehow send his only son to the earth to be brutally murdered in atonement for their sins just makes no sense to me. But your message of faith, hope, and charity for us is very, very well received, and thank you for giving it today.
Hi, I'm Barb, and I have a little different take.
Okay, good.
To me, I was raised as Catholic, and it was the end of the Episcopal year and the beginning of the new year. And to me, the story of Jesus, or however you want to think about it, is about opening up to love, dying to anger and old patterns that no longer represent who we truly can be, and being willing to rise from the ashes of ourselves to become more full human beings with love.
Yes.
Al again, I appreciate your reference in speaking about Jesus as the man as we know him, and reflection as to how he lived his life as we know it. And I appreciate that because having been a RA teacher here for, I guess, ever, discussing with the kids about Jesus is something that we do every year, and we had a couple of times spent on that with the high schoolers that I'm involved in. And so your message to all of us, as I understood it, which was to reflect, embrace, maybe consider how one thinks and acts in mirroring, if you will, mm-hmm. what we know and what's been written about Jesus, is the same message that we are sharing with our children. So I appreciate hearing it from you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lee, and this is our first opportunity to attend the church. And I certainly enjoyed what you had to say. We've been looking for one of those churches for a long time that doesn't throw stones at everyone else and every other religion. And when you got to the part about faith, I said, well, here it comes. Have to have faith in a certain aspect of a certain religion or else. And that's not the way it went. Just faith that things can get better if we all work for things to get better. Not all of us. Not all of us will do anything. But I really greatly enjoy your sermon and the apparent philosophy of the church. Thank you.
Thank you. Actually, I'd just like to follow up on your comment, because growing up in a much more conservative environment than what we have here is, it was comfortable for me to have a faith in a higher being that was going to do everything for me and is going to do everything for the world, that I could kind of be a basically good person, but really not
involve myself in changing the world myself so much. And once I got rid of the more theistic way of looking at things for me, and this isn't true of everybody, so I'm not saying that this is, you know, to be theistic is that way, but for me, when I kind of shedded myself of some of that theism, it opened me to recognize my own responsibility in trying to make the world a better place. So I appreciate your comments, and I personally find that a much harder faith to have. it can kind of sometimes be overwhelming.
Good morning. My name's Will. I'm a little confused. Where's the bunny? Because in my life, it was all about jelly bean and boiled eggs and those funny, I don't know, they're kind of weird, aren't they? The marshmallowy things, yeah, painted yellow, green, yeah, peeps. I mean, four boys in our family, it was all about who got the biggest basket, who got down first, and we never believed it for a second. You know, it's what we're Episcopalian, which is kind of like a left-wing Catholic thing, but, you know, because it's like, yeah, right, he died, they put him in a cave, and somebody moved the rock, and he walked the next day. Come on. It's just not happening. So, you know, even as children, we understood it. And a funny story about that is my son yesterday, we were working around the house and getting prepared for today and dyeing eggs, and he looks at me and goes, really? A big Easter bunny? Come on. So I think deep down it is. It's about the spirit. It's about how we live our lives and how we're open to the possibilities. But I still miss the jelly beans.
Hi. I'm Lisa. I just wanted to point out we had a sermon a few weeks ago about social justice and women being oppressed in the world, girls and women, and it just kind of touched that this is still an issue going on today, and that the message of Jews escaping their oppression and transforming their lives and having justice is still very much an issue that we all need to be concerned about. So you see this message today.
Hi, I'm Tom again, and you know, my family is from Eastern Europe of Christian heritage, and in that part of the world, Easter is the big holiday of the year, bigger than Christmas, and so it's some time for me to get to the point where I would say that the historical facts really are far less important to me than the stories and what we make of the stories. That's the essence.
Thank you.
So I think I agree with what you said today.
Hi, my name is Kaz. When I came from Japan, and first when I went to an Easter service in Catholic Church, I just couldn't understand why people dwelled on how Jesus was put to death. And it was one of the most depressing holidays, I thought, Easter was. And I think it because it focused on negative rather than focused on hope. Like tsunamis, same example. I mean, I could be focusing on, you know, almost 30,000 killed, villages destroyed. They estimate those tsunami waves actually reached about 40 meters in some areas, and wiping up the whole village. You focus on that. It's pretty depressing, and especially when I see this news, I'm in tears. But if you focus on hope, then it's a completely different story.
Everyone is invited to continue this conversation over coffee in the social hall.
I'd just like to say a few closing words then. I think I love the part, the polylogue, the best of all. I love it even more than preaching because it's a community dialogue then. And we get to hear so many different perspectives and people coming from so many different life experiences and faith backgrounds. And I think that's really what we try to represent, is people coming from diversity, finding unity in things that
are represented in ancient stories like Passover and Easter and can still be made alive today. So thank you for helping make them alive today. Blessings be.